I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In episode 55 of this show, I spoke to Gideon Kribeno, a former credit risk analyst who, in the nerdiest midlife crisis we know of, taught himself to code in Unity and was busy solo developing World Turtles, a colony builder computer game set on the back of a giant turtle floating through space. Yes, he is a Terry Pratchett fan. No, this is not a Discworld game. Yes, Terry Pratchett's daughter's all right with the concept. No, the turtle is not just a gimmick. It has an active role in the gameplay. Now, on Monday, coincidentally 9 months later, World Turtles was officially born. It's out now on Steam for early release. I bought it, I'm playing it, I will soon review it, and I think you should too if you can. And that's why I'm re-releasing our episode. But more so, it's to encourage others to wholeheartedly pursue their wild or even odd passions. Normal programming will resume tomorrow when I chat to Damien Burke of Custom Credit about their truly flexible approach to personal loans, so look out for that. But in the meantime, head over to Steam and search for World Turtles. Gideon Kribeno, welcome to the show. You and I finished school just a year apart, and then we found ourselves unknowingly sharing a few employers in South Africa's consumer lending space. However, I fell into the industry by accident, but I see from LinkedIn that you did your BSc, your MSc, and your PhD all in a row with a focus on risk analysis. So how intentional was your route into credit risk strategy?
I actually started off my first year at university taking maths, computer science, statistics, and physics. I didn't really know what job exactly I wanted to do one day, but I was very interested in these subjects, so I just combined them together. Now, even with a good high school result, the bursaries were quite difficult to come by, and I had to work as a waiter at Spur for about 6 months when I started out. Then I managed, luckily, to obtain a bursary from APSA, which is one of the big four banks in South Africa. And that was for studying business mathematics and informatics at the newly created Center for BMI at the university. And I had to catch up by completing 2 years' worth of subjects from the economics side. But it meant that I didn't have to arrive home after half past midnight after waitering. And it also set me off on a good career with a very sought-after skill set. Other than the bursary, I had no financial support. I was also planning from quite early on doing a PhD, which would take another few years. So I realized that I really needed to try and earn some money if I could. Lecturing at the university was a natural option, of course, and luckily there were a few classes that they offered me. At first, I was an assistant in some of the practical computer classes, running around helping whoever was stuck on something. But I soon handled everything from preparing materials, lecturing classes, setting and grading exams, the problems with the students even. I always actually thought of staying at the university as a lecturer and maybe eventually a professor as an option, although I think I would have been quite frustrated with pre-graduate classes where the students were generally more prone to not really wanting to actually be there, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, so I think in Cape Town there were perhaps bigger temptations, but I don't think we made a Friday maths lecture all through summer. I think they were all spent on the beach.
But since I had to work back my bursary year for year at APSA, and after the PhD, this is quite a few years, staying on at the university wasn't really an option.
Yeah, so with your PhD in hand, you then went to APSA, and you jumped into credit risk analytics. It was a time in South Africa where banks were starting to test out the data, starting to understand what could be done with it. What was your early career like? What sort of projects were you involved in?
I started off in a very nice combined retail and wholesale quants team. After a few years, our boss resigned and the team was split into a separate retail and wholesale team. So I was in the wholesale side. And the boss was never really replaced. So I started taking over more and more of the role. So informally, I became the team leader of about 4 or 5 people. And they asked me to increase the team to 12 people. Yes, as you mentioned, it was a crucial time. It was when EPSA had to comply to the advanced IRB regulations. There was a huge project with too many people to count involved. And I'm happy to say that my team played a very crucial role in the success of that AIRB project. But it ended on a really disappointing note, actually. I don't want to talk too much about it, but I'll give you a short summary. Certain members of my team and I were treated fairly unfairly, and I wasn't happy with that, so I kept bringing it up. And then all the while we were doing this project, my formal appointment to the team leader role was supposed to be imminent. It was always imminent, but it kept being dragged out for months and months. And eventually I was told that the new top brass decided I could not be promoted. He just come in and he decided he wants to stop everything and start from scratch. A meeting was called to discuss the situation with the team, and after that, I can only say disastrous meeting, 11 of the 12 people at different positions within 6 months. And the last one actually left 6 months later as well, so I never found joy in that, but it did give me the reassurance that I treated my team properly in standing up against the unfairness, and they in turn took a stand against it too. It was really a sad end to that chapter. I moved to PricewaterhouseCoopers for about 3.5 years. I enjoyed the different projects that we worked on, but I have an intense dislike of telling people that I supposedly know almost exactly what needs to be done, how long it will take, and what it will cost them, when realistically nobody really has a good enough idea. However, I learned a lot about consulting, and that definitely helped me out. And then I was eventually approached by Nedbank, where I became part of a wholesale quants team again.
So as you said, you worked for the banks, you worked for consulting firms, but 6 years ago you struck out on your own as an independent consultant.
How I actually got to be a consultant is probably more interesting than any of the projects themselves. By that time, I'd negotiated a 3-day working week since I just wanted to do more stuff that I was interested in, not necessarily working related, but I just thought I'll probably have enough money one day, but I'll buy myself out a little bit now so that I can do some of these things. Also, I wasn't as invested in the banking sector as I'd been at the start of my career anymore. It was still a great career, but I did feel myself becoming a bit bored with the repetition, and I had no real aspirations for climbing further up the corporate ladder. So I thought I'd try to see how far I can push this freelancing thing. It was also a welcome change in terms of the variety of the smaller projects that I was suddenly working on. One unusual project outside of the financial sector that I got involved in was a project based in America, but I was recruited via a company in the Netherlands. They needed to optimize the way in which they mixed certain source ingredients into different medicinal marijuana mixtures, such that each mixture contained what it needed to in the correct ranges, but for the lowest cost of the ingredients. Now, of course, on my side, it was just a fairly complex optimization algorithm, and I never actually got to test any of the products. But then suddenly, almost by accident, it became time for me to take the biggest off-ramp yet.
Yeah, so we foreshadowed this a little bit. You were getting bored in lending. You were interested in lots of stuff. We are not actually here today to talk about your career in lending. We're here to talk about how you gave up lending, put it all on hold to follow a very different dream. What is World Turtles?
World Turtles is the result so far of the nerdiest midlife crisis that I'm aware of. It's a colony builder video game set on the back of a giant turtle floating through space. It started off as me watching a simple Unity tutorial, and gradually it grew into something with possibly enough potential to become financially viable as a new career for me. I don't think I'll make as much money as I could, but at a certain point, the money alone is not necessarily the most important factor.
Yeah, okay, so let's take a step back now. You were obviously doing a lot of coding in your day-to-day job, and I'm no expert myself in what SAS and R and SQL can do these days, but even I know that it's not the same sort of coding. So how did you get into that? Was it always a hobby of yours, or What got that spark going?
When I was young, I always dabbled in this. I remember at school when we did Turbo Pascal, I tried turning it into a very rudimentary graphics engine. I even took a turn going into assembly language and so on. But I always like played around with things like this until I started university, and that became less and less because my focus needed to be elsewhere, and I married and I got 4 kids. So this basically almost came to a dead end for 10 years maybe. And then in February of 2019, I stumbled across a Unity tutorial on YouTube for the first time, and I was just amazed that this game development software was available for free to anyone who just wants to spend some time tinkering with it. I had no experience in C#, which Unity uses, but I've done a lot of VBA and SAS programming, Delphi in the olden days and so on. And most of this was focused on data handling and implementing complex statistical methodologies. But the fact that I had spent a lot of time coding, even if it was something different, helped me quite a lot. Actually, a lot that can transfer to game development. The difficulty actually shifts towards how to make sure things work fast enough, especially if you want dozens of buildings and hundreds of units like I do. It also helps a lot in identifying which tutorials are quality tutorials and which ones you should rather just skip.
Yeah, it's a good thing to call out. Yeah, having that ability to know, is this lesson I'm being given worth the time?
I actually did attend a SAS training session on parallel processing at some point. And for game development, if you want a lot of things to happen, you actually need to really understand how to push things off to different threads and get them back into the main thread without data clashing, to make sure that you could run billions of lines of data through a certain process, get it back and compile it all back together again into one result. At any time in World Turtles, there's actually at least 3 threads running. It goes up a lot more if there's something urgent or something technically complex that needs to happen, but at least 3 threads are running.
Now, I've played the demo myself, and I've added World Turtles to my Steam wishlist, something you may as well do now. We're just going to play an ad anyway. But for those that are wanting to get a feel for the gameplay, what does it look like to play the game?
Yeah, we should add, what does it sound like and what does it feel like, since these factors really are also extremely important to the whole. How they work together is the important part. It's a low-poly style. Low-poly is a bit more forgiving than trying to go for realism or high detail. There's no way I'd be able to make my first game ever a graphical masterpiece. I know that, and it's a limitation, and I'm willing to work with something that is realistic for me to achieve. It's just me, and I'm definitely not an artist myself, so I've had to take bits from here and there, but I think I understand enough of the technical side of graphics, sound, 3D modeling, etc., to allow me to have meaningful conversations with the people that do help me out from time to time with something. I think I've found enough that looks good together and that works well together for the whole, that feels real and feels authentic. At heart, it's a colony builder. For the old people listening, I could say it probably plays most like Settlers 2. It's set on a turtle, a world turtle. I use this setting because I'm a huge Terry Pratchett fan and this Will fan. I actually tweeted Rihanna Pratchett, Terry Pratchett's daughter, telling her when I had a trailer, I sent it to her and I told her, I'm working on this game. It's not supposed to be a Discworld game, but it does use the setting, the age-old world turtle myth from the Hindu mythology, and many other places on Earth had versions of this myth. And she said, as long as it doesn't try to be Discworldy, if it doesn't use characters and locations and certain specific ideas from the Discworld novels, then she has no problem with it. And it keeps me motivated to work on the game. And the turtle and space actually forms part of the game. It's not just a gimmick. You actually have to feed the turtle, for example. If you don't, it will die. And you can also use that same catapult that you use to feed it with huge balls of food to steer it around in space. So you'll fling the food to the left or the right of the turtle to get it to turn slowly to different parts of space. Some parts you may want to avoid. There are climate impacts it will be hotter or colder, more rain or more drought, and that will impact the way that you play on the world itself. So your crops may not grow as well. Certain crops like dry weather, certain crops like rainy weather, all of that will play a part in the game. Otherwise, it's just a little gimmick that you smile at for 2 minutes. There's no battles in it. I'd be dead if I had to design a nice fighting system as well. People are very particular about battle systems, and just making something that works well and plays well is quite difficult. And I've got enough to do already, so I'm trying to build in mechanics that keep you busy, that are a bit alternative. Like you build the catapult and you build up to the catapult, but you're not going to use it to kill anybody or take somebody's land. You're going to use it to save the world. There's also AI realms that play with you. Again, you're not going to be against them. You're actually going to be like their big brother. You need to help them along at different points in the game to get them to be strong enough to help you out when you get to the big projects like expeditions. Being positive, finding ways to make good things happen instead of finding ways of killing everybody off and being the sole survivor. There's another game called The Wandering Village, which also has a lot of these ideas in them, and we actually got to these ideas completely separately, independently. They have a dinosaur-like creature where your village is on, and this creature walks around on Earth, and there are certain conditions that it walks through that also impacts your world. I've actually contacted the team leader for The Wandering Village, and we've basically become online friends. She's giving me a few shout-outs here and there, and it's actually been quite a nice relationship. We're not competition to each other. We're actually friends with each other, and being compared to The Wandering Village is actually good for me.
I mean, we spoke by email as we were setting this up. We both grew up with the vintage Civilization games, and it's pretty much got that sort of joy of those early games. You know, maybe it doesn't have the cinema reel graphics that some games have these days, but it's immersive there. It feels good. And yeah, you know, it's already out there. There's a live demo people can play. Or if people just want to keep a track of news as you move towards your full launch, where should they go for that sort of information?
The two most important links are the Steam page itself. There you can wish lists and follow the game. If you follow the game, you get all updates that I post to Steam itself. You can just search for World Turtles and it will come up. I also have a YouTube channel where I post development logs and a few educational videos that I put together while I was learning how to use Unity. And if you want to be more involved in the progress of the game and give me feedback and so, please join the Discord server. There are links to everything on the title screen of the demo.
Yeah, and I'll add those in the show notes for here as well. What's it been like building that game? What have you learned? What have you experienced over those 2 years?
What I find most appealing about game development is also one of the hardest things about it. It's the extensive variety of skills and knowledge and experience and involvement that is required to teleport you to somewhere else for a while. There's no room for being disinterested. You really have to be prepared to learn a lot about the things that you don't know necessarily. So at first, it was really only a hobby. Granted that when I take on a hobby, it's quite a serious endeavor. Then I started to spend more and more time on it and less time on new business in my consultancy, actually.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I eventually gave up my long-term contract with Absa. I mean, it sounds like a silly little thing that you spend your time on, but it's actually, it's a legitimate business. many people try to make games, spend 4 months on it, try to upload it and hopefully get a few hits. But if you want to make a career out of it, if you have some ideas that you want to try out long term, it really becomes a business that you need to plan ahead for. You need to get your stuff in place. You can't just head into it without planning and without being prepared. If you want to make this work long term, you need to do it the right way. And there are certain ways to do it to allow it to take off. There's definitely a lot of luck involved. Some huge YouTuber maybe sees your game and plays it without you ever being involved in it, and that brings you 2,000 or 3,000 wish lists. It's not something that you really could do anything about except make a quality product so that you are ready for that luck when it actually comes, if it actually comes. At some time, I actually decided I'm not going to scrounge around Reddit and Facebook and post my stuff there anymore. I'm just going to ignore that for a while, for a few months, and just work on my game and the quality of the product.
Yeah, and I think the business name is a really good one to use, because we obviously live in a content creation world now, and you can get into YouTubing, get into podcasting. And sure, you'll learn as you go and you'll get a bit better, hopefully, but the barriers to entry are really low and your feedback cycle's very quick. You can record an episode, put it up, and you immediately seeing, do people like it, do people not? Well, if you can get people to watch. But with the game development, you've got this huge development cycle, which is much more like a business, where you do have to invest for 2 years, put all that work in, and then launch a DAO. There are a few points. You've won some awards and things that maybe we should talk about as well, but you get these feedback points along the way, but you really are much more like a startup, where you're sitting in your room at home, coding away with this 2 year, 3 year, 4 year cycle. So yeah, maybe we should let's brag a little bit. I see you've got some early recognition from the Steam community and the gaming community.
At first, the feedback and the wish lists and the positive feedback really came in quite slowly. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of thousands of people putting their stuff onto Reddit and making YouTube channels with 2 or 3 views each, and they're just hordes of people thinking they can make a game and become successful and be the next superstar. But that happens for a handful of people. For the rest, I think you need to be realistic. I did this because I just quite enjoyed doing it, and I had this idea in my head and I wanted to be a bit creative and see what I could do. And the more I did, the more I realized that I can make it faster by working with threads. I can add more stuff. Everything that I thought about adding, I found a way to do it, and I did it, and it made the game more complete and more immersive and more whole. That point that you made, that you sit there in your little room and you spend hours and hours doing this thing because you actually enjoy it, but you also realize that you can't just spend 3 years doing this because you need to make some money to keep you going. I spent about 2 years on the game before I decided to give myself 1 year off from my career and focus solely on World Turtles. It's now been seven or eight months of that year that has passed. And if I look at my wish list graph, there's a flat part in there that that the wish list just didn't come in. But that was a conscious decision to have a good quality product to show someone when they eventually become interested in it. So after about 16 months, I had fewer than 4,000 wish lists, which is not enough to have a good launch with. You need generally 10,000 minimum, but I was happy with the quality of the product. And then I was accepted into an event. Yeah, 2 months later, there was also the Steam Next Fest, to which you can enter your game once. And in this 2 months and 2 weeks, my wish lists jumped up from below 4,000 to above 11,000. So in 2 months, I made twice as many wish lists as I had in the previous 16 months combined. I'm convinced it's because I spent that time on the game, making it better, making it look better and play better and sound better. Of course, at the beginning, there were people that were very passionate about the game as well and saying that they can't wait for this game to come full circle and be released. And I'm happy for those people being there, because it really kept me going and it showed me that if I can just get enough people to see this, it could actually work one day. As that kept growing, I got this feeling that maybe I should just give myself a year off, live off my savings. It's a risk, yes, but it's also a risk not to do it.
Yeah, and I think there's a great message in there. Yeah, I mean, it's really good numbers on that front. So I've got 2 books, and arguably anyone who's read them is going to say they're not that great, and that's a fair judgment of them. But my first book is free on Amazon, and I think most days I'll get one or two downloads. Over its life, it's had 20,000 downloads, which is a free product you're trying to give away. I think it's good value for free, at least. Yeah, you do get YouTube videos that have got 1 million people in a day. But as you're saying, for most people, the struggle is to get noticed the first time. And, you know, it sounds like you're generating some real buzz.
It's also quite difficult to figure out which contacts actually be worth it. Early on, I made the decision that I'm actually going to meet with many of these people, most of these people, because I had no idea how the industry works and I wanted to learn from someone, and I thought this was a good way to learn for free, basically. Even if I never go with any of them, I would still have learned a lot about how they do things, and you get an idea of the playing field.
Yeah, it sounds somewhat overwhelming. I think that's probably the most valuable thing you're going to come away with, this ability to see the whole big picture, and it's a huge, all-encompassing picture you're having to wrap your head around. Seems like it's on a good path, but yeah, I wish you the best of luck. I think, Hideon, it's probably a good time again to remind everybody, where should they go to stay up to date with what's happening?
If you go to steamgames.com and you search for World Turtles, you can download the free demo there, and the demo contains links to everything.
Hideon, thank you again for your time. I've loved having you on.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. It's always nice to talk about the game and the dream.
And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed that, please do rate and review on your preferred podcast platform and share widely, including on LinkedIn. And while you're there, send me a connection request. The show is written and recorded by myself, Brendan LaGrange, in Brighton, England. Show music is by I Am Wake, and you can find full written transcripts, show notes, and more content at www.howtolendmoneytostrangers.show. And I'll see you again next Thursday.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.